Will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Patty Smith, excused for business of the House, Nolan, Mr. Speaker.
The flag salute will be led by Representative Ron Maurer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to introduce two honorary pages today who are here from my district. The first is Amy Bedlin. Amy is from Eagle Creek. She's a seventh grader at Damascus Christian School. She enjoys studying American Sign Language. She plays the clarinet. She plays basketball, and she enjoys history. She started a girls' Bible study group named WOG, Women of God. She wants to be a first grade teacher. So future teacher Amy, welcome. And second, we have Hannah Jeske. Hannah is from Oregon City. She also is a seventh grader at Damascus Christian School. By the way, did you know your fourth grade class was here yesterday? They were. Hannah is interested in volleyball, drama class, art, dance, history, and she plays the saxophone. So we have musical athletes here. She belongs to 4-H, and she was a chapel leader for her sixth grade class. She wants to be a designer. So please make Hannah and Amy feel welcome today in the Capitol.
Further courtesies, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, it's my pleasure to introduce to you today Walt Ricks, who is from Otis in my district. Walt, if you could come up here to the side aisle, I appreciate it. Thank you. Walt was recently named Oregon's Substitute Teacher of the Year, and he's here with us for Oregon Substitute Teacher Day. Walt substitutes in both Lincoln and Tillamook counties. He began teaching in 1959 in California and also served as a principal and a superintendent. For 15 years, he left teaching to own a pet shop. Walt also served for 8 years on the school board. In 1994, Walt and his wife Dixie moved to Otis. He volunteers on the chain gang for Taft High School football games and likes to tend chickens on his 2-acre farm. One student told him, "Mr. Ricks, if I were a magic person, I would make you live forever." Colleagues, please extend courtesies of the House to Walt Ricks, our Substitute Teacher of the Year.
Further courtesies, Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I want to introduce one of our honorary pages today, Lauren Reaper. Would you please stand? Lauren is an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School, daughter of Wendy Reefer, on the soccer team, belongs to the Mesa Club, and is not sure about future occupation, but hoping to go to college and be successful. Thanks for being here, Lauren.
Further courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, please extend courtesies to Alex Doss. Alex, would you stand, please? Thank you. Alex is from Portland, and his father is Tom Doss. Alex is in the eighth grade at Fernwood Middle School, and he is interested in French, math, and science. He would like to be a lawyer, a musician, or a chef, which I really like the sound of. Welcome, Alex. Thank you for coming.
Further courtesies, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not quite ready for my courtesies. Could you go on to another courtesy and come back to me, please?
You bet. We don't have anybody else in the queue, but does anyone would anybody like to step up and welcome their friends? Representative Bruin.
I'd like to acknowledge the representative from North Portland and extend courtesies to him today.
Very nice of you to do that. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to take the privilege to introduce Representative Dingfelder's honorary pages today. So as I call you out, please stand up. Aiden Oriens, and I hope I didn't slaughter that. Was that close? No, wasn't close. Anyway, she's from Portland, and she is an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School. Aiden is involved in soccer, swim team, basketball, and tennis, and she belongs to the Irvington Soccer Club. And her career goals, she wants a job that she likes, and she can make a good income. So that's a good goal. It's probably not here, but it's a good goal. We welcome you. Cooper Roberts. Cooper is from Portland, and he is an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School. He is interested in snowboarding and golf, and his goal is to attend a four-year college, and that's a very worthy goal. We welcome you. And we also have Claire Davis of Portland. eighth grader, Fernwood Middle School. She belongs to a youth group, plays tennis, and babysits. She also helps out with children at the church in the nursery. She's interested in pursuing a career in business, marketing, fashion, or real estate. Welcome, Claire. Then we have Jake Ray. Jake is an eighth grader at Fernwood Middle School. He likes sports, especially football. He belongs to the Trap Club, plays pal football. He wants a good job that pays well and has fun. Welcome. Hope you find that. Welcome all.
Further courtesies, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to welcome my honorary pages from Fernwood Middle School. So if you could please rise when I call your name. First, Dory Wooten. Dory is interested in health and math and wants to be a landscape architect or an attorney. And she's in the eighth grade, age 13, and we welcome you very much to the Capitol. Also, Mr. Speaker, Corey Elliott. Ms. Elliott is her parent, Jill Elliott, from Portland. She's 14 in the eighth grade. Corey plays volleyball and wants to be in the health field. Welcome, Corey, to the Capitol. Next, Alex Hairstone. Alex is in the eighth grade at Fernwood Middle School. Alex plays soccer and basketball, and she belongs to the Falcon Bridge Club. Her parents are John and Paige Hairstone. Welcome to the Capitol. And finally, Bill Hisayo. Bill is in Fernwood Middle School in the eighth grade. He's interested in science and math, and he wants to be a nuclear engineer. Good luck to all of you, and welcome to the Capitol. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies. Resident Dingfelder, I see you just arrived. Would you consider extending courtesies to someone who's standing near you?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I apologize that I was off the floor, and I would like to extend courtesies to two very special people, Ron and Jane Cease, former senators, Ron and Jane Cease, and representatives, and they live in my district still and have served for many, many years in this esteemed body, and I'd like to welcome them back to the Capitol.
Representative Dingfelder requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that former representatives Jane and Ron Cease, former House members and former Senate members, be granted privileges of the House and floor. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bill 5501, 5525, 277, 345, 351, 484, 665, 717, 1044, House Bill 2098, 2099, 2100, 2102, 2116, 2293, 2309, 2468, 2751, 2792, 2992, 2314, adopted HJM 15, HJM 5. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bill 5545. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 5511, 5512, 5527, 5534, 5541.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. This committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2118, relating to underground injection control program, appropriating money and declaring emergency. House Bill 2280, relating to public employee retirement. House Bill 2498, relating to construction work on existing structures. House Bill 2704, relating to fuel efficient driving techniques. House Bill 3241, relating to action involving improvements to real property. House Bill 3369, relating to local public safety. House Bill 3407, relating to public records. House Bill 3515, relating to crime. House Bill 3537, relating to taxation of non-profit corporation retail store operating for the purpose of funding low-cost housing programs and prescribing an effective date.
Bills for a second time or pass the third reading? Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 3183, relating to employees of educational institutions, clarifies that educational institutions may make non-elective employer contributions to tax, shelter, annuity, or custodial account on behalf of employee.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3183. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. House Bill 3183, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 3481, relating to timber and declaring an emergency, creates task force on Oregon hybrid popular industry.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3481A. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 3481A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 322, relating to judgments, revises laws governing judgments.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 322A. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 322A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2070, relating to fees charged by Employment Relations Board, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2070A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2070A equalizes the fees related to unfair labor practice complaints proceedings handled by the Employment Relations Board. The bill results in an increased fee to answer an unfair labor practice complaint, which was established in 1995 at a level of $100 and has never been increased, and establishes a fee to intervene in proceedings of $250. The bill also creates a new separate account for the agency for monies received. Members of the Ways and Means Committee on General Government had a healthy discussion regarding the policy of using fees as a means of funding Employment Relations Board. House Bill 2070A is expected to generate $13,200 in additional revenue in the 2006-07 biennium, which will be used to partially fund an additional administrative law judge position to address some of the approximately 137 cases filed with the board each year. The agency's budget bill 5511 assumes passage of this bill. Your Ways and Means Committee recommends the approval of House Bill 2078.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close? Oh, just a moment. Representative Hannah. Representative Wisnant asked for a call of the House. He is joined in that request by Representative Nelson, Representative Barnhart, Representative Cannon, Representative Olson, and Representative Hanna. The doorkeeper will bar the doors. Sergeant at Arms will stand, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Berger Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gelzer. Gelzer Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenwick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Hunt Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Kotek Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. McPherson Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Nolan Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnett. Witt. Mr. Speaker.
Lanny.
Not answering. Berger.
Lanny.
Gelzer. Hunt. Kotek. McPherson. Nolan. Rosenbaum. Excused. Not subject to the call. Two. Boquist. Patty Smith.
All members are present. Representative Hanna has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was a no on this bill when it came through the full Ways and Means process. I'll be a no on it again today. I want to point out to you that this is a 150% fee increase, that the new $250 fee being implemented within this bill is to answer to an unfair labor practice claim. You can imagine what that might do to a small business if they had to answer and answer and answer. It's one thing to have a small fee. It's another thing to increase the fee by 150% for the person filing and create a new, brand new $250 charge just to answer. This is the wrong direction to be going. I'm urging a no vote on this. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnett. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we'll decline at this point in time.
Representative Richardson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I would request an oral roll call vote.
Representative Richardson asks for an oral roll call. He's joining that request by Representative Wisnett, Representative Thatcher, Representative Nelson, Representative Scott, and Representative Berger. Those who are in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no, and the clerk will open the voting system. And the clerk will call the roll
in reverse order.
Witt.
Aye.
Wisnett.
No.
Tomei. Thatcher. Patty Smith. Greg Smith. Shields. Scott. Schaffler. Rosenbaum. Roblin. Riley. Richardson.
No.
Reed. Olson. Nolan.
Yes.
Nelson. Nathanson. Morgan. Minnis. Maurer. McPherson. Lim. Crummel. Krieger. Kotek. Comp. Jensen. Hunt. Holvey. Hannah. Greenlick. Gerard. Gilman. Gilliam. Gelzer. Gerard. Galizio. Floret. Esquivel. David Edwards. Chris Edwards. Dingfelder. Dellum. Cowan. Clem. Cannon. Cameron. Butler. Burley. Buckley. Bruin. Boquist. Boone. Bonamici. Beyer. Berger. Barnhart. Barker. Mr. Speaker, excuse or voting no. Barker, Berger, Bruin, Burley, Cameron, Dallum, Dingfelder. Correction, Dingfelder, aye. Continuing voting no. Esquivel, Flores, Gerard, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Hannah,
Krieger, Crummell, Lim, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nelson, Olson, Richardson, Scott, Greg Smith, Thatcher, Wisnett. Excused, 2, Boquist, Patty Smith.
The vote is 32 yay, 26 nay, 2 are excused. House Bill 2078, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill. Representative McPherson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I would request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative McPherson asks for unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to welcome a group from Capitol Hill Elementary School that are seated in the rear gallery. These are great constituents of mine, and I've had the they're accompanied by Catherine Lawrence, with whom I've participated in walk to school days at that school for the last several years, and it's been a great experience and great to get to know those kids. And I welcome to the Capitol, and I hope they have a good day. Thank you very much.
It is a pleasure to have you here. Welcome. Are there further courtesies? Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2243, relating to agencies.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2243A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill looks a lot more complicated than it is. It does do a few things. The first thing it does is it allows the department to set the renewal dates so that they can spread their workload. And secondly, it allows them to do certain things, certain rule changes without notification. Those things are things like name of the office, phone numbers, addresses, things like that. And one more thing is that it allows the combination in a pilot project, a combination of license applications through various agencies. And this is part of the streamlining effort that we've been having an ongoing effort on for some time now. And finally, and this may be the most controversial one, it reduces the requirements for experience for the manager of the director of the Oregon Department of Aviation. And the reason for that is they have an interim manager who doesn't have the required experience, and he's doing a great job. So they want to be able to retain that manager, that director. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative. In section 59 on page 40 of the A and Gross bill, it describes a combined license processing program that the Department of Consumer and Business Services would be heading up. Is this in here so that agencies such as OLCC and lottery, for example, could decide on a joint application process and share information, and DCBS would then be kind of directing that?
Yes.
Thank you. Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Further question is Kerry Yule.
I do.
He does.
I note that starting on thank you, Representative, and thank you, Mr. Speaker. I note that on lines 26 through 30, that the language that was, I believe, in the original bill relating to OLCC and DEQ and Department of Agriculture, that language has been taken out. Is that so that DCBS can actually use or have combination licensing programs and applications with broader applicability in terms of more agencies being able to be come under that umbrella?
I apologize for my short answer, but yes.
That's okay. You don't have to apologize for the short answer. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Flores votes no. Representative McPherson votes aye. Representative Dallum votes aye. Representative Thatcher votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Rosenbaum votes aye. And Representative Shields votes aye. House Bill 2243A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, will read the next bill.
House Bill 2758, relating to recreational vehicles.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2758A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2758A from your Business and Labor Committee, where it was passed out unanimously. The bill does two things. It makes a couple of changes to current statute that first clarifies an RV park owner's ability to evict illegal occupants, and secondly, for RV dealers to be properly reimbursed for warranty parts. Regarding the first thing the bill does, current landlord-tenant law does not address remedies for RV park landlords when they experience a midnight move-in, in which an RV has been driven onto a space without permission of the park owner or a rental agreement and refuses to leave the space. Right now, the landlord can call the police and report a trespass or commence an action for an ejectment proceeding, but there is no speedy remedy for the park owner, such as an eviction. House Bill 2758A allows a park owner to evict an RV parked illegally in their facilities as long as a notice is given to the RV's occupant before the owner commences an eviction proceeding. This part of the bill has been reviewed by the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, who has given it their blessing. The second part of the bill addresses the RV dealer's ability to be reimbursed for warranty parts. In 2003, this body passed House Bill 2670, which established structures for RV dealers and RV manufacturers for business dealings and remedies for activity outside franchise agreements similar to laws regarding automobile dealers and manufacturers. This bill, House Bill 2758A, provides a technical fix to the legislation in regard to reimbursement of a part that was covered under a manufacturer's warranty that ensures that the reimbursement is received by the dealer. It is neither point received any opposition, and it was passed out unanimously. I urge your support.
Further discussion? The good representative from Bend, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry. The question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? He does.
Thank you, and I apologize for not getting this question to you ahead of time. I just want to make one thing clear for some constituents. We got an email from a member of the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners. You may not be aware, but Deschutes County for the last couple of years, and again this year in 2010, is going to be hosting the International Convention for the Family Motor Coach Association. And in addition, I believe Linn County also hosts the association's Northwest Area Rally. And these, the one in Deschutes County, they estimate it's worth about $10 million a year to our economy. Anyways, I just want to make sure that through this franchise and these laws that we're not in any way affecting
the ability for the Family Motor Coach Association and the counties to be able to continue to have these functions.
Thank you for the question and the clarification. The topic did come up in committee, and this bill, as amended, will not affect any of those RV rallies.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the carrier.
A question of the carrier? Does
yes.
the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Yes, a good representative. I have a soft question, so I'd have a soft answer. But over the many years, as we've had bills in the House, I see ones that are totally disjointed. And could you please tell me why removing an RV and warranting parts should be together in one bill, as it does not truly talk about what kind of a warranter and for what kind of parts?
Thank you for your question, and I had a similar question, and it has been relayed to me that some folks that, well, it essentially gets back to the relating clause, and so there were some interests that wanted to make the RV dealers and manufacturers wanted to have clarification to the law that one part of the bill provides. The lodging association was interested in dealing with another piece of law. The relating clause worked for both, and there was no opposition to there was no controversy, I should say, with the amended version. And so as you know, in this building, things get stuffed into bills that may or may not totally relate with one another.
Thank you, good representative. You have good answers. Follow-up, please, Mr. Speaker.
Follow-up question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
The carrier does yield.
One more soft question. So then I want to be sure that this applies to any and every possible type of recreational vehicle, right?
Let me check with a committee administrator to make sure I give you the right answer on this. It appears as though it does apply to recreational vehicles, fifth wheels, motorhomes. I do want to make it clear that this is recreational vehicles, not to be confused, motorhomes, not to be confused with mobile homes, which is a completely separate issue.
Thank you very much. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, with that last answer, I'm delighted to vote for this bill because it does relate to any and every possible recreational vehicle. And that will be especially good for those in my community who operate all sorts of offshore vehicles, terrain vehicles. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This did come out of the Business and Labor Committee, and I just wanted to help
to the,
my friend.
To the bill?
Yes, sir, to the bill. We did discuss the rallies. They're totally out, untouched. They are a great generator for the economy, and a lot, especially in these smaller neighborhoods, and we all want to help them there. What looks like totally opposite or different types of subjects really aren't. The RV dealers wanted to clarify the warranty on parts and services. Lodging Association wanted to make it so clarify their ability to remove RVs that come in the middle of the night and park and aren't paying their rent, that they could remove them. And you're going to have to forgive me, Mr. Speaker, but this relating clause in bill was the perfect vehicle to solve these problems. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Representative Nelson, are you back in the queue?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I have a question of the carrier.
I'm sorry, Representative, but under the House rules, once you have spoken to a bill, you can get up at the end of the queue to speak again, but you cannot get up again to ask questions.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, may I speak again, please?
Yes, you may.
Well, colleagues, I thought this was a great bill till I just found out that I don't know what I'm talking about, and that it does that this is, affects camp vehicles, trailers, adversely. So I guess it's one of those bills where I hate that both points are in one bill. So I guess I'll be a no vote after all.
Did you wish to close? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have found the definition of recreational vehicle under ORS 650.300. Sub 16, recreational vehicle means a vehicle with or without motive power that is designed for human occupancy and to be used temporarily for recreational, seasonal, or emergency purposes, including but not limited to a travel trailer, trailer towed with a fifth wheel hitch, camper, camping trailer, fold-up camping trailer, pop-up, tent camper, truck camper, and motorhome. Recreational vehicle does not include a bus as defined in ORS 184.675 with a chassis length of not less than 35 feet that has been converted into a motor coach. So I hope that adds some clarification as to what the definition of recreational vehicle is. And this bill specifically addresses remedy for RV park landlords that experience folks that move into in the middle of the night a space, have not paid for it, won't leave, and the park owners don't have any remedy. It's a good bill, should pass.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2758A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2783, relating to termination of workers' compensation coverage.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2783A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2783 comes to you from your Business and Labor Committee, where it passed unanimously. House Bill 2783 is good for business. It is particularly good for small owner-operated and family-owned businesses in which one or two people handle every aspect of the business's daily operations. House Bill 2783 extends the window for renewal and non-renewal of workers' compensation policies from 30 to 45 days. Today, Mr. Speaker, if a workers' comp insurance company chooses not to renew a policy at the anniversary date, or if it must renew at terms less favorable to the business, current statute requires 30 days' notice before coverage under an existing policy expires. House Bill 2783 and its amendments move that notice window to 45 days, which is a modest yet significant increase to make life just a little bit easier for businesses, and particularly the small business person who would otherwise have to drop everything in order to search for a new carrier. This bill gives that business owner a little more breathing room. An amendment reflected in the A and Gross version of the bill provides for 10-day notice for non-payment, and this was part of a compromise developed with the workers' compensation carriers. House Bill 2783 builds off the advance we made last session in expanding the window from 30 to 45 days for general liability policies with House Bill 2719. It has been endorsed by the Management Labor Advisory Committee. And the Department of Consumer and Business Services is supportive of this bill, and it helps further their fine efforts to ensure that businesses have the opportunity to leave the assigned risk pool to the generally less expensive voluntary market. Some of you may have noticed reports over the last 3 years that say small business owners in Oregon feel more upbeat about the supportiveness of the state's business environment than do small business owners in California and Washington. House Bill 2783 will help us continue that trend, colleagues, and I ask for your aye vote on House Bill 2783. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A member of my household is employed by a workers' compensation firm.
Okay. It is duly noted. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this bill today, as it is a good bill for small businesses that sometimes...
To the bill, sorry.
Rise in support of this bill, as it is a good bill. Small businesses that sometimes have to... change their work comp carrier, and that's a pretty complicated process at times, and it would give them just a little bit more time. Also, the 10-day clause, if there's somebody who's refusing to pay, still helps the insurer to move on. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron, do you wish, let's see, Representative Shields, do you wish to close? He does not. Those opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder votes aye. Representative Gelser votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative, that's everyone. Okay. All have voted. House Bill 2783A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3120, relating to marriage forms, issued by County Clerk.
The question now arises upon third and final reading of passage of House Bill 3120A. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3120A is requested by the Oregon Association of County Clerks, and it changes the way marriage documents are generated and processed in Oregon. For example, current statutes conflict on the deadline for submittal of marriage documents to the county clerk. One statute requires submittal within 10 days. Another statute specifies within 1 month. House Bill 3120A eliminates the conflict requiring persons solemnizing marriages to deliver marriage license applications, licenses, and records of marriage back to the issuing county clerk within 10 days after the marriage ceremony. Also, currently, contents of marriage certificates are specified in statute, and the marriage certificate form is produced and distributed by the director of the Department of Human Services. House Bill 3120A changes that arrangement, directing that the state registrar for the Center for Health Statistics within DHS prescribe standard forms for marriage licenses, applications, licenses, and records of marriage by administrative rule. Currently, our current law also has the DHS director issuing a commemorative marriage certificate. This bill instead authorizes each county clerk to design and issue the unofficial commemorative certificates. Easy bill should pass.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close? She does not. All those in favor? Question now arises upon third reading. I need a new screen here. Okay. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. House Bill 3120A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative McPherson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative McPherson requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Any objections? Seeing none, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to greet a group who are visiting the Capitol today from Stevenson Elementary School, who are in the back gallery. They're accompanied by Rodney Robert, and they are in the fifth grade. And we appreciate their coming to the Capitol on this wonderful day. I had a chance to visit with them outside the building here a little earlier, and I hope the rest of their day is an enjoyable one here with us. Thank you.
Further courtesies? Seeing none, the clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3490, relating to proof of loss.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3490A. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill comes before us at the promise of payment to ambulance service drivers. They have been under what happens now in a current situation. Ambulance service providers complete a medical report that's called a PIP. It's a personal injury payment form to car insurance drivers. Currently, ambulance personnel respond within minutes to the scenes of accidents and provide immediate life-saving care and ambulance services. It's not their priority to getting a signature of the person that's injured on a form. And so House Bill 3490 requires payment from auto insurance companies to public and private ambulance services upon receiving requests with a completed form. Permission to use a visual aid, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kump requests permission to use visual aid. Is there any objection? Seeing none, go ahead.
Thank you. I know you can't read this, but this is like the fine print what ambulance service drivers have to provide. They have a checklist on page one and a full narrative on page two to submit to insurance companies. And it is a very comprehensive form, and sometimes the lack of a person's signature will stop all payment. So they have come with insurance providers together. They worked in agreement to say as soon as the car insurance providers are informed of the services, they will pay the amount to these small businesses that are doing life-saving actions for people in the communities. I really appreciated the cooperation between insurance providers and the ambulance service providers to reach an agreement, and they brought this before the subcommittee on health and the full committee on health in complete agreement. And so with that, I would appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
She does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative. In Section 3, which is on page 2 of the A engrossed bill, it states that if personal injury protection benefits are paid based on information that appeared to establish proof of loss, and the insurer paying the benefits later determines that the insurer was not responsible for the payment, then the insurer will give notice and explanation to the provider, and that immediately after receiving notice and explanation, the provider shall promptly repay the insurer. The question that I have in this is then what kind of remedy does the provider have for being able to get paid for the services that they provided to the person receiving those benefits?
May I restate the question, Ms. Representative Crummell from Wilsonville?
Certainly.
Clarification?
My understanding of your question is I'm an ambulance service provider. I submitted a report to insurance company A, and they, in good faith, paid the amount for those services. And then they find out that I'm processing. Oh, that there was a mistake and they needed to repay some of it. Is that correct?
For clarification, Mr. Speaker, if it's all right.
Clarification, does carrier
it is messy.
It is.
She does.
It is messy. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
So, the insurer has found out that they shouldn't have paid, according to this.
Correct.
And so they send a notice to the medical provider, i.e. the ambulance company, that says, we shouldn't have paid you. Please send us the money back. So the provider now has to immediately cut a check back to the insurance company and send them their money back.
Right.
Is that a question to the carrier?
Well, that where I'm getting to, Mr. Speaker.
Clarification.
Where I'm getting to is that then the provider now has not been paid for the services. So they need to seek a remedy so that they can get paid for the services that they've provided, whether it's an ambulance service or a doctor or anybody else, but it's a medical service that they provided. So if I'm the patient and Dr. Bates took care of me, but my insurance says they shouldn't have paid, so he has to remit to them. Now he's out the money. What's his remedy for being able to get paid for the service that he provided to me?
Good representative from Wilsonville. This part of the bill was not discussed in committee. I have committee staff right here. This was not part of the discussion. I do know that when we were in our work group offline, that the insurance providers had no concern about this aspect of it. They thought that basically for years the ambulance service providers have not been getting their just payment. They weren't concerned about it at all and felt that once the insurance provider does get this form completely filled out, that's enough documentation to comfort their to provide their comfort zone.
Okay, thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm concerned, and I'm trying to decide if I'm concerned enough to vote against the bill or not. But I'm concerned from the standpoint that I was looking through the statutes, and this does not just relate to the way this has been structured in the statute. It doesn't just relate to ambulance companies. But I absolutely agree. Ambulance companies, it should be easier for them to get paid, and having to get a signature on a form from somebody that may be laying or near death doesn't make a lot of sense. So that's a common sense part of the bill, and I like that part. The part that I'm concerned about is in Section 3. You have two things sort of at odds here. One is that when a provider provides services to us, a medical provider, and we say thank you very much and bill our insurance, and they say okay, great, they will, and so they send a bill to our insurance company, they may have to wait 30, 60, 90 days in order to get paid. Now, the law in Oregon actually is 30 days, but the insurance companies have managed in many cases to stretch that out to as long as 120 days, depending on the insurance and the type of insurance and whether it's workers' comp and all of those other dynamics that are at play. Now, what we're doing here is we're saying, as a provider, if an insurance company has paid you and they weren't supposed to, then upon notice from the insurance company that they, in fact, weren't supposed to pay you, you as a provider immediately, you don't have 30 days, you don't have 60 days, you don't have 120 days, you can't play with their money on your stock portfolio like they can play with your money on their stock portfolio. And so you have to immediately send the money back. Well, if this is, you know, let's say it's a surgical procedure that was done that's, $4,500 or $5,000. So now you're going to take that money out of your checking account. You're immediately going to send it back to the insurer, to the insurance company. And that's all fine and good that you've done that. But now the problem is you've provided a service, a surgical procedure to somebody or whatever the service is, and technically you haven't been paid for it. And it's probably way over 120 days at this point, which records tell us diminishes the chances of being reimbursed or being paid for the services that you provide. This bill does not go on to say what happens to the provider. What is the remedy for the provider? And maybe that's discussed somewhere else in a statute, but I'm not sure that it is. So I'm concerned about situations arising where providers get the notice, they pay the insurance company back as well they should, but then they have no way of recouping their cost and getting paid for the services that they provided. Because if it's been an injury caused by a motor vehicle accident, for example, the health insurance company is going to tell the provider, go get it from the auto insurance company. The auto insurance company can kind of play around with it and say, well, maybe we are, maybe we're not. Oh, by the way, we're not. So now who bears responsibility? And it should ultimately be the client. It should be the patient. But what we've done in healthcare is that we have taken the patient out of the equation, except for getting treated. And so if the doctor sends the patient the bill, the patient says, wait a minute, this bill was paid. I don't have the money to pay you your $5,000. It was paid by the insurance. Send it to my health insurance company. It becomes this never-ending treadmill that the provider ends up being on. So I'm just raising a cautionary note here with this bill, and I'll decide when the time comes, whether sometime in that 30-second time frame, whether I'm going to support the bill or not support the bill. But I do have a concern about where this leaves our health care providers. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to reassure the...
To the bill?
To the bill, please, yes. I do want to reassure the gentleman from Wilsonville on this bill. This bill applies only to personal injury protection. And the problem that's been solved by this bill, thanks to the representative from District 22, is that when an insurance company brings in a victim of an automobile accident, the ambulance company isn't sure whether that person is the insured or not the insured. It might be somebody on the street. It might be somebody in the vehicle. And at that point, they don't know who the insured is. When the physician services are provided under PIP, they've had a chance to find out who the insurer is. They have a chance to link it to the policy that goes to the insured. And the likelihood of it being a clean claim and therefore paid easily is much higher. But the ambulance company really doesn't know. So the problem with the ambulance company is they've had trouble crafting a clean claim to get their money back in a reasonable period of time. The representative from Wilsonville, I'd like to compliment her, worked out agreements with the ambulance company and the PIP provider, State Farm, acting for themselves and others, and recognizing that the ambulance companies, particularly small companies in areas of the state, are really hazarded by not being able to move money. So they were quite willing to be able to pay back something if they were paid inappropriately in order to get the cash flow, because many of them are really cash flow starved in the state. So it's a very narrow application. The likelihood of it being a problem for medical providers who provide surgery or other services is very unlikely, because they've had the chance to talk to the person to find out what the policy number is, who the insured is, and it makes it much easier for them to present a clean claim, which usually is paid for in a relatively short time. So I would urge a yes vote on this. It solves a small problem that's very important to some small enterprises in the state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise in support of House Bill 3490, and my fellow representative from Wilsonville, I want to assure you that when a provider receives payment from an insurance company and it was inappropriately paid by the insurance company, that the insurance company will let them know, and that there is an appeals process that the provider can go through. In fact, every insurance company I've dealt with, the insurance company provides that appeal process. So when they say promptly, and you use the term immediately, the term is promptly, and that you don't have to pay it today. That you can go through your normal process and repay that. And that happens on a daily basis in a primary care practice, and I'm assuming it happens quite frequently in an ambulance service. But the issue is about allowing them to be paid in a manner that they don't have to chase a patient to get a signature. And so I believe that this bill is good. And to address your issue of remedy, the issue of the remedy is through the civil courts, because there are a certain number of patients that through whatever mechanism, whether it's fraud or they just believe they were covered under an insurance policy that they thought they had, that the remedy goes back to the provider through the civil courts. And routinely, we turn people over to the collections agency just like every other business. And although I wish we had a better system, that's kind of the way it is, and you try to minimize your losses, and that's one of the areas of increase in healthcare costs is that patients don't provide or don't pay their bill in a timely manner. So I believe this bill is a good bill, and it should pass. Urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kemp, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker, thank you. My colleagues from the Healthcare Access Committee really answered the question much better than I did, and I appreciate their support. This bill is to help those people that are immediately on a scene at an accident, small public and private ambulance services, so that they can continue their role in helping all of us after there's been mistakes made on the road and we end up injured. So with that, colleagues, I would ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Shields votes aye. House Bill 3490A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Olson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, request the rules be suspended to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Olson asks that the rules be suspended to return to the order of courtesies. Any objection? So ordered, Representative Olson.
Colleagues, please welcome the fourth grade class from St. Mary's School in Albany. You go ahead and stand. They are here with their teacher, Ms. Anne Marie Vetti, and several parents. They are studying Oregon history and government this month and are excited to see us in action today. Thank you.
Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies? Seeing none. Final readings, memorials, and resolutions. Clerk will read the memorial.
HJM 3, requesting that federal government work with Oregon to determine progress of Oregon schools.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Memorial 3A. Representative Kemp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, this is a topic I know something about, students and testing. As a school teacher, as an administrator, we have long held tests in high esteem. And as an alternative school teacher, at one point, I share with my students when we start out a new year that I will not be giving them any formal fill-in-the-blank tests and all these things. And they go, oh, and they breathe. They don't realize that I'm going to ask them to write paragraph after paragraph after paragraph every day and read book after book. But our national government has seen fit to make sure that all students are achieving at high levels. And Oregon has done their best job to ensure that all of our students are. What that has required in the last few years is a tremendous amount of testing at grades 3, 5, 8, and 10. Oregon has been on the front leading edge with technology to allow students to take their assessments on a computer. In order to do that, we, the State Department of Education, went to a technology provider to have the components and to do the server part of this production so students can take the test in school. Over the years, the department had developed all the questions, everything was provided to this service to do the technology part of this. Well, regretfully, after 7 years of use and students becoming very familiar with taking online tests, also to the fact that they were able to do multiple opportunities, they were allowed to take the test up to 3 times a year. And also the thing that I, in my district, really appreciated, you could take a math test, so long as it wasn't reading or writing, but you could take a math test in over 30 different languages in your native language. On the screen would have English and then in a native language. Those things made testing online invaluable, and students were able to master that. And then, as we all know, what happens sometimes with technology, the whole darn system fails. After 7 years, they had a meltdown. There were problems, not necessarily with the technology, but in the communication and the contracts with the provider. HJM3 is asking our Federal Department of Education to hold our children harmless. Harmless from not anything that they could control or prevent, but a breakdown in technology and contractual agreements between an agency. I believe our students and our teachers deserve the right not to be held in not meeting adequate yearly progress because the technical systems have not been productive this year. That is the intent of this memorial, and it just means that the United States Department of Education looks at this closely before and takes anything into consideration. Superintendent Castile works constantly with the U.S. Department of Education to ensure that our students have the best opportunities to meet adequate yearly progress and increase their achievement levels. So with that, colleagues, this is a request to our federal government to hold our children harmless because of technology and contracts, and I appreciate your support.
Further discussion, Representative Dullum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the memorial.
To the memorial. Thank you. House Joint Resolution number 3 would hold our children harmless. But I think there's some other things that we have to look at. I was a no vote in the committee. And there were two reasons that I was a no vote. One, when technology-enhanced student assessment, TESA, if you're in education, that's the vernacular of our business, when that was implemented about 7 years ago, maybe six, many school districts had a lot of questions. When we go to the electronic version of the Oregon assessment, Will we lose validity? Will we have problems transferring the information from the paper and pencil test to the electronic test and back and forth? We in the school business were assured that the electronic test would be no different than the paper and pencil test. Many of my colleagues were deeply concerned about that. There should be absolutely no drop in reliability from the electronic to the paper and pencil, and because we are in litigation, which brings me to my second point, I'm not sure that the state of Oregon or the legislature should get involved. We should rely on the excellent relationship that our superintendent of public instruction has with the Department of Ed. I'm sure the Department of Ed that has educators in it, if there were any difference in validity, would take that into consideration. And in conclusion, I don't see the need of the resolution. So I'm voting no. I voted no in committee and will vote no now. And I urge you to do the same.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, just yesterday evening, I met with an elementary school in my district, a group of parents. Guess what they wanted to talk about? This very issue. Colleagues, parents out there are extremely concerned about this. They want to know how adequate yearly progress is going to be affected by this breakdown. The students are confused. The students don't know how to take paper and pencil tests, assessment tests. They're used to taking the tests on the computer. It's a very different kind of test taking. The parents are extremely concerned about this issue, and that's why I rise in support of HJM 3, because this way I can tell the parents, we're doing what we can. We're sending a message that the students should not be responsible for what happened between the Department of Education and the testing company. I wish we could fix that. I don't think that's within our purview. But this way we can send a message that we do care about what happens with this breakdown in the testing system, and therefore I urge your support of HJM 3. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In declaring a conflict of interest, I would just like to say, oh, to the memorial.
Do you wish to declare a conflict or speak to the memorial?
I'll hold the conflict and speak to the measure.
To the memorial.
Yes. Colleagues, in teaching last year, I promised the teachers there at Yamhill Carlton Elementary School that I would speak out against the TESA program. I have never in all my years seen such a program administered. It was poorly constructed, confusing, and disastrous, most unfair to the students. So in my opinion, as the principal knows there, when I brought him back to see how difficult it was for these children to, I guess, to finish the test or even complete it, I promised that I, you know, would certainly speak against it, and I'm almost glad this happened, because we certainly need a better testing policy.
Further discussion, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
She does.
With apologies,
that's
Representative.
Fine, Representative.
On the staff measure summary, it is noted that there was a discussion about the appropriateness of this House Joint Memorial versus a letter from the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Can you kind of enhance our thinking on that, please?
Yes, Representative. The thinking on that is much what our good Representative Dahlem mentioned, is the possible concern that this is sending too strong of a message rather than the cooperative work that Superintendent Castillo has been working with the federal government. That's it, is that they don't want to have any breakdown in communications.
Thank you. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
colleagues, and with utmost respect to the representative of the carrier and representative from District 22, I think in her own words, reasons not to support this memorial are there have been problems in communications and with the contract. There has been a breakdown in technology and contractual agreements. The superintendent of public instruction has been working constantly with the U.S. Department of Education. I think, and then also to quote the representative from Washington County, those ongoing good efforts, which can be have been taking place, acknowledged, can answer the questions that parents have. And we should be relying on the State Department of Education to be continuing to resolve this issue in this matter. And I just think this is highly inappropriate to specifically be naming a member of the cabinet in our memorial. I would urge a no vote.
Further discussion. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Thank you. I will be voting in favor of this memorial with some reservation that I'd like to add to the record. The No Child Left Behind Act came as a mixed bag to people that advocate for people with disabilities. The fact is, nobody can argue with the idea that we want all students to achieve. Unfortunately, NCLB does not provide the funding or the assistance to make that happen. What it has done, however, is forced local school districts and state departments of education to focus on students who have historically underachieved because we have not paid attention or devoted resources to them, and that includes students with disabilities. Oregon has been a leader in high standards for students in general, but has not been a leader in high standards for students with disabilities in terms of their graduation rates, their ability to learn to read, and their ability to perform on mathematical tests. This is not because these children have disabilities. It's because we have not focused on providing appropriate instruction to them, and especially in regards to students with developmental disabilities, beginning as early as elementary and middle school, we have started to put them into vocational programs where rather than working on reading and mathematics, we have them working on things like grocery shopping and laundry. I think that it's very important that we focus on academic achievement for these students, and we need to focus the resources, both our state resources and federal resources, to make it possible for these individuals to do it. In terms of the testing and testing requirements, NCLB does not provide appropriate exceptions and appropriate accommodations for students with disabilities to be able to demonstrate their achievement on tests. The TESA actually did provide the ability for some students with disabilities to be able to participate in testing. And I can tell you my own son, who does have a developmental disability, will not be able to participate in testing this year and must do an extended special assessment because individuals that can't hold pencils cannot fill in bubbles on the test, and NCLB does not allow you to have accommodations like using Braille or having an assistant to help you with the tests. So for some students, this shift from an electronic to a paper and pencil test is a very significant shift and could really cause them difficulties. So I will be supporting this memorial and hope that we can all focus on urging Congress to provide the resources that are necessary to reach this very laudable goal, to recognize that they have not done that. This bill provides a very big hammer for an important cause without providing the resources to make it happen, and that we need to focus on achievement for underachieving students, but we need to give these students the tools they need to reach the achievement that they can. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, or the memorial.
To the memorial.
Colleagues, I supported this in committee, and I will support it again today. It is appropriate to send this memorial to the Secretary of Education, and the reason why it's appropriate to send it to the Secretary of Education is because it is she and her staff who will be making the decision about adequate yearly progress with regards to Oregon's kids and in school. One of the things that I think we need to recognize here is, irrespective of how you feel about our own Oregon Department of Education, irrespective of how you feel about the way that they've handled TESA, irrespective of how you feel about the testing protocol and the testing program and its validity and reliability. Irrespective of how you may feel that the department probably mishandled their contract with Vantage or the other way around, that Vantage mishandled the contract with the state. Irrespective of all of that, it's the kids that end up being put kind of behind the eight ball here. And the way NCLB is written, it's the kids who will end up sort of suffering, if you will, because it can affect the federal dollars if not enough of our schools are meeting AYP. In the testing protocols, I would like to correct one thing that was stated earlier, is that NCLB does allow for accommodations in testing. And I know this because I have been a test proctor over the last couple of years for the school that I work in. And both the federal and the state rules do allow for accommodations, but they're very limited in terms of the accommodations that can be provided. I do urge a yes vote on this from the standpoint, and you won't hear me say this very often on this floor, but for the kids, this is probably a good memorial, irrespective of how you feel about the Department of Education. I do urge an aye vote in deference to my good colleagues to the up here. Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Comp, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, just briefly, the reason this memorial is important is because we are asking young people at the age of nine, little third graders, I call them little because I'm still taller than they are, and to adjust to a whole new system, and this is going to impact possibly probably not schools that haven't already not met the bar. It's going to hit the schools in the middle that are already strong schools that have to keep up the pace where they're at in order to meet adequate yearly progress. As a school administrator of a school that has come a long ways in trying to reach that target, I know very well personally that that formula is a four-year calculation. 1 year will change your designation for 4 years if you have a dramatic dip. A little dip, you're gonna be okay. But if your scores drop appreciably, particularly with your younger children that are having to make an adjustment, you are basically then in a cycle that will take 4 years to recover from. This memorial asks that if schools have a statistical change in their scores from over the past 4 years, to have it looked at and make sure that it's not because of the testing, it is because of some other factors in the variable. So with that, colleagues, I do not want to have schools or our children penalized, as Representative from Wilsonville pointed out, as possible loss of funds by the big snafu of testing for our students. I urge your support and thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Barnhart votes aye. Representative Greenlich, how do you vote? Greenlich votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Richardson votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. HJM 3, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. First reading of Senate bills. Oh, I'm sorry. Bills or reports and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5501 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Board of Accountancy and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5525 relating to financial administration of the long-term care ombudsman appropriated money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 277 relating to juveniles. Senate Bill 345 relating to execution sales. Senate Bill 351 relating to missing persons. Senate Bill 484 relating to unlawful trade practice. Senate Bill 665 relating to speedway destination site development and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 717 relating to scope of practice review committees. Senate Bill 1044 relating to destination resorts.
Bills read first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5547 relating to state financial administration for appropriating money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 64 relating to exemption of investment records from disclosure. Senate Bill 65 relating to authority of Attorney General to represent parties in class action. Senate Bill 66 relating to administration of public funds and appropriated money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 74 relating to elections conducted at polling places. Senate Bill 124 relating to ballot title. Senate Bill 171 relating to property tax returns. Senate Bill 236 relating to brands and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 237 relating to pesticides. Senate Bill 242 relating to school districts. Senate Bill 301 relating to trustee notice of sale. Senate Bill 537 relating to address on Department of Transportation records. Senate Bill 545 relating to persons regulated by the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board. Senate Bill 559 relating to workers' compensation guaranteeing contracts. Senate Bill 579 relating to Oregon growth accounts. Senate Bill 747 relating to races. Senate Bill 748 relating to authorization in to practice public accountancy. Senate Bill 946 relating to leave from work for victim of certain crimes and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 950 relating to public records.
The question now arises upon third and final reading of Senate Bill 950A, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 950A passed out of the Senate with 28 aye votes and two excused and unanimously from the Judiciary Committee. It is a bill that's brought to us by the Oregon Library Association. Oregon public libraries now routinely obtain their patrons' email addresses to notify them of the availability of requested books, special events, etc. Under Oregon public records law, the law currently protects a library patron's address and phone number from disclosure, but it is apparently questionable whether an email address is an address entitled to protection. This bill clarifies that your email address as a library patron is exempt from public disclosure under the Public Records Act. Accordingly, I ask for your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I yield.
She does.
Representative, if 200 million spammers already have my email address, why the hell do I care about this bill?
Oh, Representative, I wish I could do something about that, but this bill addresses email addresses that are with a public library and a further protection for patrons of public libraries. I urge your support.
Representative Minnis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I yield.
Has a list been released to date? Has someone actually made that request and there has been that information released?
Thank you for the question, Representative. Not in Oregon, but in Florida, a list was requested by a commercial entity, and they were going to use it for commercial purposes. And so the Oregon Library Association thought it would be helpful to clarify that addresses in our statute means email addresses as well, so they will be exempt from that type of commercial disclosure.
Thank you
for the question. You're welcome.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Representative Barker? Barker votes aye. And Representative Shields votes aye. Senate Bill 95A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed.
Chair requests.
Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, May 10th, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Witt, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request a temporary suspension of the rules and a return to courtesies.
Representative Witt asks that the rules be suspended for the purpose of returning to courtesies. Any objection? Seeing none, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd ask you to join me in welcoming the Lewis and Clark Elementary School in our East Gallery this morning. We have 66 people here this morning, and their leader is Barbara Penn. Welcome to all of you.
Further courtesies? Seeing none. Representative Hunt. One moment. Just stand at ease, Representative Hunt. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Nelson to change her vote on House Bill 2758A. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for Representative Nelson to change her vote on House Bill 2758A. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Nelson, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Representative Nelson votes aye. Representative Hunt. I'm sorry, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the rules be suspended and that Representative Edwards be allowed to, David Edwards be allowed to change his vote on 2070A.
Representative Scott requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that Representative David Edwards be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 2070A. Is there objection? Seeing none. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote?
I vote nay.
Representative David Edwards votes nay. No. Further announcements? Seeing none. Remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 8:30 a.m., Thursday, May 10th.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m., Thursday, May 10, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m., Thursday, May 10th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.